Thousands of Moscovites take to the streets on Monday chanting Russia without Putin in what many are calling the largest demonstration in the Russian capital since the 1990s. Speaking at that demonstration, before being hauled off by riot police, anti-corruption blogger and crusader Alexei Navalny channeled the feelings of a growing protest movement.
What has Putin done all this time? He had a colossal mandate of trust. They had the Duma, which they controlled. They enjoyed support. Oil prices were high. And now we look back and realize that we didn't get anything. No police reform, no army reform, no fight against corruption. It's obvious that people who are fervent supporters of Putin maybe 2 or 5 years ago now say, look, buddy, we hired you to work, but you've done nothing, so we don't support you anymore.
Meanwhile, Prime Minister Vladimir Putin, Russia's national leader, struggled to create the appearance of business as usual.
There will be a significant renewal inside the State Duma. It's an obvious fact. But the next stage following the presidential election will be the forming of the next government. And, as we have said many times before, there will be a significant renewal among members of the government too.
Hello and welcome to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
My first thoughts on Russia's elections on Sunday are as follows. Nothing has changed, but yet everything has changed. On one hand, United Russia, despite its heavy losses it suffered on Sunday, remains in control of the Duma. Sure, they lost their supermajority, their constitutional majority that allows them to change the constitution unfettered, but they can always count on the votes of Vladimir Zhirinovsky, who, despite his clownish antics and nationalist rhetoric, almost always supports the government. And come March, Vladimir Putin will almost certainly be elected president, despite Russia's increasingly restive electorate. The Kremlin has sufficient administrative resources to assure to that. So United Russia stays in control of the Duma. Soon Putin will be back in the Kremlin. So nothing's changed, right? Well, not so fast, because on the other hand, everything has changed, and changed big time. The air of omnipotence, the air of invincibility that Putin had enjoyed until now and counted on for the past decade appears to be gone. Watching his joint appearance with Medvedev on Sunday night after the election results were read, he looked shaken, he looked vulnerable, and he looked very, very mortal. The elite also appears to be increasingly divided. In fact, more divided than I have ever seen it since Putin took power a decade ago. And at the same time, Russian civil society is becoming increasingly active, increasingly assertive, and in fact, more assertive and active than I've seen since the perestroika period. And that assertiveness was on display yesterday as an estimated 10,000 people demonstrated in Moscow with another opposition rally set for tonight. So, Kirill, what's happening here? Has Russia reached some kind of political watershed?
Sort of. Following your distinction between the two areas, area of nothing has changed and the area of everything has changed, let's focus on two various fields of our discussion. First of all, nothing has changed. Really, it doesn't matter how many PMs from Just Russia or Zhirinovsky party are now in State Duma. There is no any difference because, you know, all these parties, they are trustful partners of United Russia and Putin in all the Dumas and so on. Of course, circumstances, they can press them to do something else, but the circumstances are happening outside Duma, outside official politics.
So just to clarify for our listeners, inside the Duma, the Kremlin has a lot of means to pressure different political parties to vote the way it wants. So in a lot of ways, it doesn't really matter if United Russia has a two-thirds majority or a simple majority, because they can count on Zhirinovsky. They can often even count on the communists.
Yes, and the first and the main tool for this policy is money, of course. So they are trying, or not trying, but they just hiring these MPs from the so-called opposition parties to vote as they want, just paying them. Everybody in Russia knows this. So in these terms, in terms of the so-called official politics in Russia, which you can see on the TV screens of official TV channels, nothing changed. Nothing. And you can switch on your TV channel 1 or NTV or whatever, and there is absolutely the same as it was 2 or 5 or 10 days before. So in these terms, nothing changed. But if we look outside Duma, if we look outside TV screen, and if we look to we look on the internet, if we look on the streets, and just to speak with the so-called ordinary folk in Russia, you'll see that I'm not sure that everything changed, but something changed has changed. I'm absolutely sure that that is so. First of all, let's look at the very interesting and very important distinction between those who are now this evening supporting Putin on the Moscow squares near Kremlin, mm-hmm. yes, Nasha and so on, and those who opposing him. Those who are supporting him, usually it's Nasha, it's a youth movement, pro-governmental, and Молодая Гвардия, and so on. Usually they're poor educated. Young people, usually poor, and they are from Russian regions. And as Stanislav Belkovsky, you know, this notorious political expert, yes, just 1 hour ago published a very interesting analysis of the political situation on the Open Space website, speaking that now the main electoral base or supporting base of Putin's regime, they are poor, uneducated, and a population of North Caucasus.
Mm-hmm. The election results show this.
And that is very interesting because if you remember the situation 10 years ago, Putin was the president of wealthy and middle class.
Because he was credited with creating that middle class after the chaos of the 1990s, after the Yeltsin period, after all the poverty, deprivation, and chaos that existed. Putin was credited with restoring order, and that was the parts of the intelligentsia supported him, business community supported him. That's changing right now, isn't it?
Yes, the situation is upside down now. Yes, upside down. So we can say that we are watching a birth of a kind of new Russian social politics now, because if Putin, and I'm sure that he will win the presidential elections, he must be the president of, first of all, of poor. He must go on with his populist rhetorics and so on. But middle class, intelligentsia, wealthy people, and so on, they're strongly opposing all this kind of rhetorics now in Russia. So they have to understand what's going on now. Or it's a new kind of a Russian edition of Peronism, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's well, that in some ways that seems where we might be heading. One of the things that strikes me right now is that the authorities seem to be out of step with the society that appears to be emerging in Russia, and I'll explain what I mean by that. As I said a bit earlier, Putin was credited with creating this new prosperity in Russia, creating this new middle class. Well, any political scientist will tell you that as prosperity, as living standards rise in an authoritarian society, you begin to have demands for political reform. We saw this in Chile. We've seen this in Taiwan. We've seen this elsewhere. This is something that happens, and it appears to be happening now. So this is how much do you think that Putin has almost become a victim of his own success?
I think that those who are opposing Putin, opposed yesterday and now just this the minutes, opposing him on Triumphalnaya Square in Moscow, they are in some sense part of Putin's regime, because as you told, they had been created, all these new medias, all these new businesses and so on had been created during the Putin's era,
and are a product of the prosperity,
yes,
of Putin's,
yes,
era.
Of course, and some of them just the result of some ideas and so on of Kremlin administration. Don't remember about all these semi-liberal medias who are partly financed or still financing by Surkov's administration and so on. They like this regime, but they don't like a man who is leading this regime. So that is interesting situation. Yes, they're not socially connected to those who are opposing the regime in some provincial towns and cities, who are voting for communist or just Russia and so on. They had to be, and still have to be a kind of foundation, a base of this regime. But now they are not. Why? I think it's the result of the mistake of Kremlin and Putin himself.
I'd like to follow up on that, because one of the things that really struck me during the election campaign, the rhetoric that Putin and others in United Russia were using was, we saved the country from the chaos of the 1990s. We reined in the oligarchs. We brought Russia up from its knees. Now, that kind of rhetoric worked brilliantly in 2000 and in 2003-04, and even in the last cycle in 2007-2008. But now, you have a significant portion of the... First of all, that period is fading from memory. That was a long time ago. You can only run against the 90s.
It's a new generation.
It's a new generation. So on one hand, that even people that remember that, the memory's fading. You can't run against the 90s forever. And a whole new generation that's grown up in relative prosperity and that doesn't even... Never mind, they don't remember the Soviet period. They don't even remember the chaotic 10 years that followed the breakup of the Soviet Union that we all remember very well. And so this rhetoric rings hollow to these people. Do you get that sense?
Yes. First of all, of course, this rhetoric doesn't mean anything to them, I think. So you just quoted playing the audio of Navalny interview. He told that the first period of Putin's rule, everyone in middle class and so on supported him, but now not. But he was speaking about himself. Navalny was the same when in the beginning of 2000s, I'm sure that he voted for Putin. But now such people like Navalny, like former Putin's officer Milov, former Putin's prime minister Kasyany, they all have the roots in the beginning of Putin's regime. And now they're opposing him. It's a first fact. And the second, it's very interesting that Kremlin, Putin, Medvedev, whoever, they tried to do something with all this part of electorate in spring and the beginning of summer of this year. Remember, yes, we discussed just...
We discussed this with the creation of Prokhorov's party.
Yes, with Prokhorov's party, and they tried to focus all these supporters and voices and so on this political party.
And ironically, today, in an interview with Echo Moskvy, Surkov, Vladislav Surkov, the deputy Kremlin chief of staff and the unofficial ideologist of the regime, said, we really need to create a political party to channel this urban middle-class discontent. Well, for God's sakes, I mean, they were trying to do that with
yes,
the creation of
it,
Right
yes.
Cause, and Surkov himself destroyed that. Now, I don't have a crystal ball or a window into what's going on in the inner corridors of the Kremlin, but it seems to me there was a debate among the elite about this, and it seems to me the elite got scared and went back on their old tried and true methods of just relying on Putin and the power vertical and United Russia, and got nervous about having all these other parties that they potentially might not be able to control. Do you think that's what happened?
I think so. But another thing, I'm sure that they who knows, maybe secretly and so on, they launched a kind of opinion poll in summer, maybe. And the result was so embarrassing, so awful for United Russia Political Party and Vladimir Putin that they became very nervous. And this state of their consciousness, it has as a result all these strange gestures during from this case of Prokhorov's party, and then decision that Putin will return as a president, and then before the elections all these cases of Golos monitoring organization, and all this DDoS attacks on the websites, and a lot of things. A series of grave political mistakes. They nearly destroyed their political image.
And this was shocking to me. I mean, think what you will about this regime. In the past, I never really questioned their competence. and right now, I'm beginning to question their competence. Because the court case against Golos, which is a Western finance, albeit independent by all accounts, electoral monitoring group. They were, just for our listeners to know, what they were charged with was violating the electoral law by posting a map on the internet that outlined violations of the electoral law.
Yes,
which
but
is Kafkaville.
Yes, it's not media. Yes, they cannot prosecute them as a media organization because they are not
media,
organization.
Yeah. Yes, but this had, you know, as you'd say in Russian, obratny rezultat. It backfired on them. Because nothing, Golos, if I was watching them on election day, and they certainly were not intimidated. They were out there putting violations up on the internet, and like we always knew these violations were happening. But this is the first time I was able to watch a YouTube video of carousel voting.
Yes.
Where one voter was being bussed
from
polling station to polling station, voting, you know, 10, 15 times.
Don't forget, there were not tens, but hundreds of such videos.
Yes.
They're viral all over the internet and so on. So they can't arrest every man who shoot this video. And so,
are they out of touch with the internet age? Is that another thing that's happening right now, that these guys were, you know, great political operatives in the 80s and 90s, with their KGB training in the 70s certainly prepared them for that. But are they really out of touch with this age?
I think so. He's afraid, Putin and his circle, they're afraid of internet. Of course, they have some specialists. There are a lot of rumors about a special hackers brigades, finance,
angry Kremlin bloggers.
But hackers brigades who organized all these DDoS attacks on Echo Moskvy and Kommersant and so on websites. And I believe in the existence of such brigades. I'm sure that they really exist. But if you want to use these people, you must understand the limits of their capacities and of their role in the politics. You must understand how now, in this internet age or whatever, web age and so on, how the politics today, just how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Using these hacker brigades or bots or whatever, sometimes you destroying your own image, your own reputation, not those. As you remember, hackers publish the private letters by Navalny.
Yeah.
There was nothing.
It didn't hurt Navalny at all. Hurt Navalny at all.
Yes, absolutely.
In fact, they looked bad.
Yes,
that.
But everyone knows that this had been done by Kremlin hackers and by Surkov himself.
I mean, one of the interesting things, and I remember the early days of the internet, to this day, a debate was going on, is whether the internet was going to be a tool that would create greater individual freedom, greater democracy, or if it was going to be a tool that was going to be able to be used by governments to control society more. And it's funny, we're seeing this being played out in modern Russia right now. It's almost a fascinating sociological thing to watch, isn't it?
Yes, all of them. They think that internet is a tool. Internet is not a tool. It's an environment. It's a field.
Exactly.
You can't use your environment as a tool. Of course, you till some limits you can do this, but the consequences will be disastrous, as we see.
As we've just seen.
Yes.
I'd like to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog. With me in the studio is Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFEL's Russian service. We don't have a lot of time left, but there's a couple of things I did want to discuss before we wrapped up, and one of them is Navalny, a fascinating figure, and to me, he reminds me of Boris Yeltsin in the late, with a lot of differences, of course.
He's younger.
But he's younger.
He doesn't drink.
He doesn't drink as much. But, I mean, that said, if you remember the Yeltsin of the late 80s, when he was really rising, when he was kicked out of the Communist Party and he began... He was clearly ascendant, and anybody that was paying attention to the Soviet Union in those days could see that he was ascendant. Navalny has that look and that feel about him right now, don't you think? Because one of the things you say is one of the things many supporters of the regime say, well, there's no real alternative to Putin. I mean, look at these people, Nemtsov, they're all, you know, yesterday's news. There's no real, well, along comes this Navalny. Now, he's not without his faults. But what do you think? Does he look like the ascendant force right now?
I think so. Returning to the similarities with Yeltsin, both of them, Yeltsin and Navalny are not intellectuals. Don't forget about this. As you remember, Soviet dissident movement was a movement of intellectuals and Soviet intelligentsia. And their leader was non-intellectual. Today, we see on Triumphalne Square a lot of journalists, writers, whoever. But one of the main leaders, maybe the main leader, is Navalny and Yevgenia Chirikova, who is not intellectual also.
Right, who's like a Russian everywoman.
Yes.
I mean, you look at her and people must see their sister or their mother or their aunt.
Yeah.
Do you see a political future for Navalny right now?
I can't predict. I can't predict, of course. Of course, he has a chances. He has chances to be a big political figure. He has very strong character and very strong personality.
He's very charismatic.
Yes, he's very charismatic.
And fearless.
Yes, fearless, and he's very clever. All this project with the Raspil website and his blog and so on, it's a very clever idea. But now he's standing on his two feet, yes, and two bases, maybe. Mm-hmm. One is Moscow intelligentsia and all these tech-savvy people and so on. Second one is nationalistic.
Yes.
And at some point he has to decide.
Does he? Because you anticipated something I wanted to mention. This is another way he reminds me of Boris Yeltsin, and this is that if you remember when Boris Yeltsin first took the leadership of the democratic movement during Perestroika, he inherited the mantle of Andrei Sakharov. A very big mantle to inherit. And a lot of people in that movement were very, very, very suspicious of Yeltsin at that time. And certain people in the movement, like the late Galina Starovoitova, convinced a lot of the others to accept Yeltsin. And she kind of educated him in the language of democratic politics in a lot of ways. Well, why didn't they trust him? Well, Yeltsin had a little bit of a slight nationalist streak in him, too. But he was also his communist past. Navalny, you find a similar thing. You find the intelligentsia suspicious of him because of his nationalist leanings. But yet they also, like in the late 80s, like the dissidents understood then, they don't really have a better figure to put forward right now. So do you see some parallels there as well?
Sure. I think the future in this case will be in the ability of Moscow-educated circles and intellectual, whatever, to somehow to get on with all this moderate nationalistic powers or circles or movements who are supporting Navalny. Of course, not with the radical nationalists,
right,
moderate like Konstantin Krylov and so on, who are friends with Navalny for some years.
If you could separate the nationalists from the chauvinists, if that's possible in Russia,
it's possible, especially now when everyone is speaking that the one of the most efficient electoral base of Putin's regime is North Caucasus.
Mm-hmm.
That is the point where Moscow intelligentsia can or could get on with the moderate nationalist, Russian nationalists in the Navalny.
Yeah, but there's always the danger of chauvinism capturing that kind of a thing when you're.
That's why I'm a little bit suspicious about all this.
This is a very interesting dynamic, and we'll be sure to continue to watch it closely. The very last thing I wanted to bring up, Kirill, today is this is about the elite. I personally have not seen the elite as apparently divided today as it has been since before Putin came to power. The last time I saw the elite this divided was in the late 90s when you had Yevgeny Primakov and Yuri Lushkov and the Atechestvo Sirasiya trying to take power from Boris Yeltsin and his clique. And that lasted until Putin came onto the scene. Putin unified the elite and kept it unified with an iron fist and with carrots and sticks and so on. The elite seems to be splitting now. This became evident after the United Russia Party Congress when it was decided that Putin would return to the Kremlin, but you're seeing a split in the elite. And if you combine this split, if you agree with me that there is such a split,
I agree, with
what you see in the society right now and the dynamics in society, are we in some kind of very, very volatile and, dare I say, pre-revolutionary situation?
Oh, I don't want to speak about revolutionary.
No, I use that word very carefully.
Yes,
and I use it in a kind of political science kind of way.
but don't forget about another split, not inside elite like a vertical split, but don't forget about the horizontal. Yes, split. It's a regional issue. Yes. Because we have a lot of regions in Russia who are absolutely different, and this voting shows us that there are a lot of Russian regions where United Russia even didn't win.
Yes, there were. Certainly were. And there were some regions where they won 99%.
Yes.
Although, I mean, how much of that tells you the ability of the different regional elites to fix the election, and how much of it does it tell you about United Russia's support?
I think it's up to how it will be in Moscow. You know, Russia is a very centralized country, yes, and I think how the process will go on next month or 2 months before the presidential elections, it will be crucial for regions. If the regional leaders will see that something wrong in Kremlin, this split will grow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure. Obviously, it will grow. So now a lot of things is connected to how Kremlin and Kremlin administration and Putin himself, how they will what's the behavior they will choose in this situation, or if it will be a kind of Putin version number two, as his press secretary Peskov told today, or if it will be Peron number two in the latest months or years of his rule in Argentina. So they made a lot of, as we told, they made a lot of grave political mistakes. And I'm not sure in their ability to do something now other than just to press, to arrest, to whatever.
We've all spoken to many, many analysts in Moscow over the last several days. There's one comment that really sticks in my mind, and it was made to me by the Moscow-based political analyst Dmitry Oreshkin. He said that Putin is comfortable with scripted situations. He's comfortable with things that have been rehearsed. He wants to be asked questions and give pithy, funny, memorable answers that make everybody laugh and remember him. He doesn't know how to act in a non-scripted environment. And they seem to really just not know what to do right now. I don't know if you get this impression, but I certainly get it. And that is potentially dangerous.
Yes, he's not so kind of solid, yes, now. He seems like a little bit anxious, but I'm not sure that he is. So I'm sure that he is not over.
Yes. No, but it might be the beginning of...
Some kind of new political process.
Yeah.
That is the question.
And maybe there's a role for Putin. Maybe Putin will play a leading role in that process if it's going to be a different Putin than we're seeing right now.
I'm not sure. It's a question of his aides and of his think tanks and so. We just discussed before this... recording that 2 or 3 or 5 years ago, Putin had Kremlin administration had a special think tank. Yes, with the head of Gleb Pavlovsky.
Gleb Pavlovsky,
who could define everything, yes, and strategize everything, and they were and still are the experienced ideological fighters. With a very good education and so on. But now they don't have them.
No, and Pavlovsky has gone off the reservation. And when Pavlovsky left the Kremlin or was removed from the Kremlin earlier in this year, it didn't get a lot of notice at the time, but looking back, it may have been a very, very, very significant development.
Yes, they are suspicious to intellectuals. They tried to use them in the beginning of Putin's regime, and then they decided that there is no any use of this words, and so they sack everyone and so on. But now they must understand that that was a mistake.
That was a big
mistake. Because they can't explain to the population what's going on.
Right. Unfortunately, this has been a fascinating discussion, Kirill. This is all the time we have today. Thank you for being with us. You've been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog. My guest in the studio today has been Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. You can read the Power Vertical blog on RFERL's English language website at rferl.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical or visit our fan page on Facebook. And now I'll leave you with the music of my favorite socially conscious Russian rap star, Noise MC.